Welcome to the Barth Calderon Wealth Protector Podcast. Our founder, Harry Barth, and his son, Brad, are top speakers on asset protection and estate planning to many incredible groups across the country, including the Women Presidents Organization, Vistage, the Young Presidents Organization, the California Apartment Association, and many more. And now, here is your host, Paul Hitchcock.
Hi, everyone. We're just getting ready here. Okay. Hi, this is Paul Hitchcock. It's just 1 o'clock right now, and I want to thank everyone for joining. We're getting some great numbers here. And for those of you who know us, sorry for repeating this, but for those of you who don't, we are an estate and asset protection planning firm. We've been around for over 35 years. And Brad Barth, who is going to be presenting today's talk, is one of our top speakers across the country on estate planning and asset protection to a ton of incredible groups, including Vistage International, the Women Presidents Organization, the California Apartment Association, and Brad sitting here, probably, what, 45 others, Brad? So Brad's in high demand for this talk, and this is a great one because we work with a lot of rental income property owners, and a lot of them more and more are investing in real estate within their IRAs. As probably most of you know, there are more and more platforms are allowing you to do that, and so this is a huge one. It's how to protect yourself. So it's asset protection. It's how the IRA LLC works. And keep in mind that at the end of this talk, you will get an email. If you have questions, you're probably going to have a ton of questions. We don't have time to address everything, but if you have questions, we're going to give you an opportunity to email those questions. And also, we have a free assessment for anybody who's in attendance here where you can get some one-on-one input from Brad on your own situation, or maybe you're an advisor advising people. Whatever the case is, look for that email following up this talk, and that one-on-one is really great. So thanks so much. Really glad you're here. I'm going to have Brad come over, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. Great. Thanks, Paul. Hello, everyone. Thanks for taking the time to meet with us on this very important topic of the use of the IRA-owned LLC, not only as an alternative investment vehicle, but also, I think more importantly, from an asset protection perspective, which I don't think is addressed enough when it comes to investing in a self-directed environment. What I'm going to do here is I'm going to go ahead and share my screen with you because I have a pre-prepared presentation. Okay, so this is the presentation, which basically is the gist of it, and I kind of subtitled this, Take Control and Protect Your Retirement, the Power and Convenience of the IRA-Owned LLC. It's being presented by me, Brad Barth. I'm a partner here at the firm of Barth Calderon, and as Paul has already mentioned, I've been practicing in this area for the last 21 years, both in an estate planning, exit planning, and asset protection planning. And I kind of came across this idea of the IRA-owned LLC just simply out of bare need for my clients. You know, every type of asset has some unique vehicle to help protect it. And those of us who are familiar with things like corporations and limited partnerships and LLCs and certain forms of trusts, for gifting and charitable purposes, maybe domestic asset protection, offshore asset protection. So all these tools are available, but we're presenting here from California, and California has a unique situation when it comes to retirement assets. And as Paul had mentioned, I am a speaker, a national speaker for Vistage. And so I get a chance to go around the country and speak to individuals about protecting their assets. And one thing that always comes up is, what about my retirement plans, my 401ks, my 403bs, my IRAs? And so I get a chance to take a look at each different state statutes as to what extent are those assets protected from the claims of creditors. And so where some states offer great protection, you also have other states like here in California that have very modest protection, let's just say. And so to make sure that we do a full 360-degree asset protection plan for our clients, I needed to come up with a workable solution that would help with our clients' asset protection needs when it comes to their retirement needs. And that's the genesis of why I looked into the whole area of the IRA-owned LLC. And then, not being a financial planner myself, I then got to learn also about the power and conveniences of self-direction, and learned of an entire new world of opportunities for alternate investments, and specifically in the real estate world, which I'm assuming most of you have an interest. Past experience has shown that most people who are interested in IRA self-directions or IRA-owned LLCs typically are within the real estate world. So as I go throughout this presentation, I'm going to use, as most of our examples, the purchase of real estate, although it can apply to anything from gold bullion to sport tickets to, mango farms in the Philippines. So you kind of have a wonderful opportunity, but we're going to kind of use real estate as our prime example here. Okay, kind of getting into the actual presentation. Let me make sure I got this thing working. Here we go. So basically, from an agenda and a housekeeping, probably for the next 45 minutes or so, I'm hoping to cover these main topics. Talk about what is a self-directed IRA, some basic introductory comments, what are the benefits, and why haven't I heard about this? And I've given this talk several times, and there's always like a big light bulb that goes off when you're about halfway through the presentation. It's like, wow, this is amazing. How come I never heard about this? I want to make sure I at least address some of those things, because some people start thinking, well, this sounds a little too good to be true. You know, is this legit? And I'll share with you the areas that kind of establish that with the law, et cetera. And also, with any kind of legal tool, you always have some do's and don'ts. And specifically, when you're dealing with qualified plans such as IRAs, and where you start taking on control of your own retirement plans, you need to be careful that you don't trip up some of these I call it landmines. Now, the law of unintended consequences, because when you're working within a qualified environment, unlike some other types of penalties when it comes to dealing with taxes, sometimes a penalty may be a percentage of what should have been paid, or there are some mitigating factors when it comes to dealing with actual penalties for making a mistake. When it comes to messing around with your IRAs, and if you don't do it correctly, that is, you're involved in prohibited transactions or dealing with disqualified people, the penalty is not assessed on the amount of the IRA that's in question. It's 100% disqualification of the IRA, which could result in, as you can imagine, penalties and taxes upon penalties upon taxes. So we want to make sure in this area, which is completely fine to do, we just want to make sure we come with eyes wide open as to what we can and cannot do, because we don't want you making these mistakes. And this is constantly why, when we work with certain IRA custodians in the self-directed environment, we want you to be with people who will help counsel you through, either it being legal counsel myself or being with a proper self-directed custodian who will offer you some advice and give you some direction as what you can and cannot do. Again, the benefits of working with counsel to kind of help you avoid these landmines, which could be, like I said, could be stepped on. And then I'll spend the bulk of our time talking about what is the IRA-owned LLC. Not only is this the solution of protecting the retirement assets, but also within the real estate world, you want to make sure you have the greatest amount of flexibility in dealing with your IRA assets and the acquisition of properties, whether they're at a trustee sale, a probate sale, a foreclosure sale, or even dealing with things like tenants, toilets, and other forms of troubles, right? So you want to make sure you have the ability to address those things without the need to constantly interact with your IRA custodian and the time delays that are associated with that. So this way, the checkbook control certainly kind of helps you. And then ultimately, I'll kind of give you the basic steps in how you set this thing up at the very, very end. That's kind of our agenda. So when I normally give this presentation, I normally am co-partnering this talk with one of my self-directed custodians. And you'll see me make reference to their company. Again, we have no affiliation with them. It's just I have a long-term relationship with them. And so a lot of this front-end stuff typically is covered by the IRA custodian. And here I'll talk about the legal stuff. So I'm going to kind of do my best to kind of address some of these things up front. And basically, so what is a self-directed IRA? And I'm just going to kind of read the next two slides, because it's pretty, I couldn't say it better myself, that a self-directed IRA is an IRA. It could be a Roth, traditional, it could be SEP. And some people don't realize this, and we've set these up, it could even be inherited IRAs. So if your parents have a 401k that's part of their inheritance, you rolled it over to an inherited IRA, you could even use that to self-direct. It could be part of a SEP or a simple, where the custodian of the account allows the IRA to invest in any investment allowed by law. And you're going to find out that in IRS publication 590, what allowed by law is not listed in what you're allowed to do. it's such a broad spectrum of things that you can do. It's actually listed in reverse implication as to what you cannot do. You cannot invest in life insurance products, collectibles, or S corporations. So other than that, anything else is available. We'll kind of get into some of those more details in as we kind of go through the presentation. But it, pretty much anything allowed by law is pretty broad. A self-directed IRA can invest in real estate or other alternative investments, assets, and it will receive the same tax deferred in a traditional setting or tax-free in a Roth setting treatment that an IRA receives when you buy or sell stock or mutual funds and retirement accounts. Additionally, for example, when you buy and sell stock in your company 401k or typical brokerage IRA, you don't pay the capital gain tax on the gains from the sale of the stock. That is one of the key benefits of using retirement accounts to save and invest. And then similarly, if you buy real estate or private stock and sell it for a gain from your self-directed IRA, you also do not pay capital gain tax on any gains from the sale. Again, because we're in a closed universe of a tax-deferred, traditionally or tax-free Roth environment. And one thing I want to add to that last bullet point is not only is it capital gain tax-free transactions, but also all the rental income, which ordinarily could be taxed as income, passive income, or ordinary income, depending upon how it's being operated. That's also tax-free because, again, we're in this closed universe of a tax-free environment, which makes it unique for things like real estate, where you otherwise have to sell the property and eat the gain tax, or you have to do a 1031 exchange. And then here you have some flexibility without the need for accommodators or other time restrictions to set forth in the 1031 exchange process. So here's the thing. Why haven't I heard about this? This comes up all the time. And I guess I kind of sum it up in this first bullet point here, that it's not in the bank or broker's best interest to advertise it. So think about it. If you're taking your retirement money and you're investing it in real estate, it's not really administratively feasible for Fidelity to manage your properties and take care of the tenants and the toilets. So it's not within their administrative feasibility, and you're not dealing with publicly traded assets. Therefore, again, they're not making any money. They're in the business of making money. They make money by selling stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. And that's kind of why it's not one of their top of mind things. They want to sell you their stock portfolio, their mutual funds, their bonds. And so that's where they're making money on those transactions. So typically this is not a thing that they want to put top of mind. It doesn't mean they're not available. It's just not typically available at Wells Fargo or some other type of a big brokerage house. Not to mention, few attorneys are knowledgeable about the self-directed idea, and also CPAs don't know about this also. And having worked with clients over the last 10 or some odd years and doing these types of plans, when I work with counsel or I work with tax counsel, I get questions coming from them, which makes it pretty clear that they're not very familiar with this type of structure. So here again, maybe it's not being brought up during the course of planning opportunities, attorneys, CPA options, or even with their financial advisors. And then the IRS has, as I mentioned, has allowed self-direction since IRAs were created as part of ERISA back in 1974. It's just, as I said, in publication 590, which you can look up on irs.gov, that you can invest in anything other than, as I mentioned, life insurance, collectibles, or S-corps. And again, S-corp isn't even mentioned. It's just by operation of law, S-corps have to be owned by U.S. natural persons, and your IRA is not a U.S. natural person. So by default, it's not an available option for investment. So it's not that it's not available. It's just that it's always just not well discussed among professionals. So here's a good kind of back and forth between what the differences are. If you want to look on the left-hand side of your screen, you'll see what a traditional, not self-directed options are. Investments are typically limited to those that have been approved by plan creators, banks, or brokerage firms. And your typical investments include stock portfolios, bonds, mutual funds, and CDs. That's what you typically get when you work with a traditional financial house. But on the right side of the screen, you're now looking in the self-directed environment. And here again, your investments are more limited to what you can't do. And as I already made reference to, there it is again, IRS publication 590. You cannot do life insurance, collectibles, and S corporations. But typical investments include rental properties, promissory notes, private stock. You can even get involved in a private business. LLC is the subject of today's talk. Tax liens, precious metals. I hear on the radio almost every morning when I'm driving into work about putting gold into your IRA. Well, how do you think they're doing it? They're converting your IRA from a traditional environment to a self-directed environment, and they're using those funds to purchase precious metals or other forms of bullion. foreign properties. I got clients that buy property all over the world, buying raw land, private placement, et cetera. Like I said, the scope of what you can do is limited only by life insurance, collectibles, and S corporations. So it's pretty broad in what you can do. And this was part of the like wowee that I learned about when I started exploring this more from an asset protection point of view. I didn't realize how much options were available for alternative investors. Now, because we are in the closed universe, and again, closed universe meaning we're within your retirement structure, because as I mentioned, you're not paying any taxes on the capital gains, you're not paying any taxes on the income, well, at the same time, you got nothing to write off. You're, again, in a tax-free world, so losses can't be written off either. You're not dealing with the taxes on the gains, but yet you're not writing off the losses as well. So make sure you understand it works on both sides. Losses cannot be replaced in the retirement plan. So normally you would make offset passive earnings and passive losses. Again, that's not going to happen because we are in a tax-free or tax-deferred universe. So our traditional thinking about these types of things is not really relevant in this type of world. Now, a couple of important slides that are coming up here, this being one of them, and this is really the main thing that not only do you have to know as a best practices and working in this area, but also a properly designed operating agreement for your IRA should specifically list what the manager is able to do and with whom are they able to deal. So it's very important that you don't trip up on the IRC 4975 disqualified persons. And so here again, the whole principle behind this is that we are not allowed to get any present benefit from our retirement assets until we make distributions. If you understand the basic principle, everything else makes sense. Understand you don't get any present benefit from your IRA until you make distributions and pay tax or Roth make a distribution. So because of that, you cannot deal with yourself. And it comes up all the time. Can I take a loan from my IRA? No. Can I use my IRA to invest in my wife's business? No, because you're getting personal benefit. If you look at the bullet points, you cannot benefit, your spouse cannot benefit, your ancestors, mom, dad, grandma, grandpa, and their spouses cannot benefit. Lineal descendants cannot benefit. Can I buy a property in Nevada where my kid's going to school with my IRA? No. Why? Because you're getting a present benefit because the rent or otherwise is coming back to you to your IRA. Investment advisors are disqualified people, fiduciaries in the plan, and of course, certain types of business entities, as I already mentioned, S corporations. So if you understand the principle that the idea is no present benefit, the rest of the prohibited transactions make sense as well. Just understand that you have a limited class of people who you can deal with. You can deal with your sisters and brothers. You can deal with your in-laws. You can deal with business partners. You can deal with friends. No problem. Not you, not your spouse, not your ancestors, not your descendants, and certain other fiduciaries. Just understand that. And all the can I type of questions and the what if questions all are just a matter of taking that particular fact pattern and running it against this list. There are flow charts that are available to say, is this person within this degree of relationship? Yes or no? And it's very simple. Can you deal with them or not? And if you violate these rules, this is what I was telling you about where you could have a 100% disqualification of the retirement, and that would be a big ouch. You don't want to do that. Qualified people, here you go. Aunts, uncles, cousins, brothers, sisters, unrelated friends, nieces, and nephews. All right, so this is an example. And then here we also have prohibited transactions. Again, a continuation of 4975 and the IRS publication 590. Here again, the principle, owner cannot benefit from the IRA. Owner cannot borrow money from the IRA. Owner cannot sell their own property to the IRA. Happens all the time. Well, I want to buy a piece of property. I already have a piece of property. Can I buy my property with my IRA? No, you're getting present benefit. I'm a real estate agent. Can I sell the property that's inside my IRA and take a commission? No, because you're getting present benefit. Just understand that and you'll be just fine. Can your sister do it? Yes, you can't do it. Cannot provide services to the IRA. You cannot swing a hammer. Okay. No sweat equity. If you own a piece of property and you're the manager of an LLC, you can provide administrative services. You can help with hiring a property manager. You can help find tenants. You can help do some of the bookkeeping, but you cannot pick up a hammer and change the water heater. You're adding sweat equity. You're adding benefit to the IRA. Can't do that. Let's see here. Cannot use the IRA as security for a loan. No guarantees, right? Cannot buy property for personal use. cannot use to buy collectibles, and cannot buy life insurance. If you understand all of these cannots, everything else is pretty much pretty straightforward. And like I said, it's a matter of taking the fact pattern or the question and to be applying it to these rules, and the answers are pretty much black and white. So getting back to what most people do in this environment, they want to buy real estate with the IRA. So the pros are, as we already kind of discussed some of them, your capital gains are tax-free, positive cash flow is tax-free, you have no limit on hold for your 1031 exchanges by analogy. The IRA can borrow money. I've heard a lot of comments saying that my IRA doesn't have enough money to buy a particular piece of property. Can I borrow money? And the answer is yes, you can borrow money within your IRA. You can leverage your investment. Just realize you would have a thing called UDFI, which is unrelated debt financing income. Not a problem. This requires a form 990T filing with your CPA. And then the funny thing is, as I mentioned to you earlier, that you normally can't write off your losses. If you do have unrelated debt financing income, you actually can now deal with some of the write-off because you have part tax-free world and part financing world. And so there are some rules on that. Here again, you want to make sure you're working with not only counsel that can help you, but also with CPAs who are familiar with this. And therefore, you can potentially earn a larger rate of return and invest on capital. And we work with clients that started off with very small dollar amounts, you know, $10,000, $15,000 in their IRA, because that's pretty much what IRAs typically have. But then the hold, the appreciation, the tax-free sale, the repurchase of a larger property, the hold, the tax-free sale, and then buying and buying. Next thing you know, they got hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars worth of property inside an IRA. You're like, how else do you do that if it wasn't a rollover from a 401k? They did it through property acquisitions over time in some good business sense. So real estate is really cool. Some of the cons, again, no tax advantages of owning real property. So for some of us who are property investors, the tax advantages to being having rentals, you can't apply those here. No deductions for capital losses, again, unless you have that UDFI. You are solely responsible for all gains and losses, and you cannot replace losses. So in other words, if you actually have a tax loss and the IRA doesn't have enough money, you just can't come from the outside and just start dumping cash into the IRA to pay those. The source of funds to pay those tax liabilities have to come from the IRA itself, which is important. And sometimes that may require, you know, other funding streams, which I have in another slide coming up. As I already mentioned, I make a specific slide on this because this comes up a lot. I find a lot of misinformation on whether your IRA can take a loan. Yes, it can, but whoever lends to the IRA must do it on a non-recourse basis. Because again, you cannot guarantee the assets of the IRA for the benefit of a third party lender. As a matter of fact, there are not a lot of cases in this area, but one of the cases that is a landmark case dealt specifically in this area of giving guarantees. And so if you mess this one up, again, it's one of those landmines, it's a bad move. But you can get a lender, and we do have lists of non-recourse lenders. And non-recourse simply just means that the lender themselves, if you default, are looking strictly to the assets of the IRA, which typically is the piece of property, for all their recourse, and you have no trickle through personal liability, which is kind of a bonus from our perspective. But normally they're a little harder to get. They have a limited pool, and then you must typically put down a larger down payment of 40 to 60% must be non-recourse. Property must cash flow, because that's what they're looking to. They can't look to your personal assets because no personal guarantees, and they're only stuck with the property itself. So they're going to want to see positive cash flow on rent rolls, et cetera. Want some cash reserves inside there as well. So not just the property, maybe have a little cash reserve inside the IRA as part of their security within the IRA. Again, no personal guarantees. Bad news. You don't want to do that. And then here again, if you do take a loan out, you will have UDFI again. Not a problem. Just be aware of it. You can do it. It's no big deal. Okay, so what's the process of buying real estate? And I only put this up here because remember, you cannot self-deal. You cannot buy your own assets. So here's what happens. Hey, Brad, I identified a property. I bought a piece of property. I put a loan or earnest money down on a piece of property. I now want to self-direct. You messed it up. You got it backwards because your IRA cannot buy your property. You got to make sure that the self-directed IRA is set up in advance. So if you look at the steps over here, open a self-directed IRA first. then shop the property. You can maybe shop the property and eyeball one, but don't put any money down on it. Don't sign a contract because now that property becomes disqualified to your self-directed IRA. You can't buy your own assets, no self-dealing. Remember that it's the IRA that is the buyer, not you, which means the custodian of the IRA needs to sign off on any of your purchases. And you would do that by submitting a direction letter for the earnest money. You would then, funds would be wired to the IRA, from the IRA to the closing. You fund and record, and all your rents are made payable to your IRA. Easy peasy, no problem. For those of you that are already involved in this, you know that process. I point that out because it's important that the IRA be the buyer of the asset, not you, and then you want to get it in. Too late. You're going to mess up the timeline. When we talk over the IRA LLC, as I mentioned earlier about some of the convenience factors with checkbook control, if you notice, we get down and we cut out number 5. You still have to open up the account. You still got to shop the property. Now it's the LLC that's the buyer, not the IRA. The manager signs off and not the IRA custodian, which is a very convenient area. No need for direction letters and time delays and added costs because you, the manager, is doing all this. Funds are wired from the LLC, you fund and record, and rents are made payable to the LLC. Everything is analogous, except it's a bit more streamlined, and you have a bit more control with that checkbook IRA process. And if the IRA assets are depleted, I mentioned this to you already, and I have clients that come to me and say, hey, listen, I have $100,000 in my IRA. I want to buy a property for $95,000. Probably a bad idea because, as we all know, as soon as you buy the property, the roof leaks, the water heater breaks, and the toilets start to leak. And now all of a sudden you have other costs. Well, as I mentioned, you can't come from outside sources to pay those repairs. All the funds must come from within the IRA. We're in a closed universe. So if you have only $100,000, maybe buy a property for $50,000, maybe buy a property for $60,000. You want to have some cash reserves. So when you have those property-related needs, you can then use those cash reserves from within your IRA to pay for it. Otherwise, you have to make a contribution, which is limited to practically nothing in the IRA world. You may have to liquidate other IRA assets, which may be in a different IRA or maybe another 401k. In other words, to contribute money in from a custodian to custodian transfer. Transfer money from other retirements. Bring on a partner who hopefully can bring some money into the deal. Get a loan or sell the asset. In other words, you don't go around and, you know, and buy a property with only $5,000 in cash left over. You got to be very careful on how you approach this because you're in a closed universe. Just remember that. When it comes to all of your capital improvements and costs and layouts within your real estate enterprise. Okay, so now we're going to chit-chat about where I kind of come in more as the asset protection attorney and talk about the use of an LLC. And again, we always have to remember that I'm coming to this from the perspective of a California attorney where our laws aren't as favorable as many other laws in the state. And what I'd recommend that you do is you can simply just Google, you know, are my IRAs protected from the claims of creditors in my state of Utah or Texas or Florida? And you'll see sometimes the IRAs are protected to the same extent as your 401k plans, ERISA type of arrangements. And sometimes, like in California, it's not. And I'll show you the statute that we're going to make reference here in our California Code of Civil Procedure. But here again, why is it important to protect the IRA? Again, my genesis as to how I came to this whole topic is that millions of Americans participate in qualified retirement plans. It's one of our three largest sources of assets for our clients. They have real estate, they have life insurance, they have retirement assets. That's typically, for most Americans, the three large sources of assets. We want to protect those IRAs from the claims of creditors. And everyone is familiar with the tax and retirement benefits of qualified plans, but what they're not so familiar with is to what extent are those assets protected if a creditor tries to grab those from you, okay? So that's kind of why I came to this whole situation. And of course, why to protect them. And here's the situation. In most states, including California's, they failed to protect traditional IRA accounts from creditors. And we're going to get to it, I think, on the next slide. Don't confuse IRAs with 401ks or 403bs. There's what's called an ERISA world and there's a non-ERISA world. And typically, our retirement plans fall within a non-ERISA world for purposes of anti-alienation and spendthrift protection. Not to confuse how they were created. They were created out of the ERISA law, but they don't enjoy ERISA asset protection. And ERISA is just the Employee Retirement Savings Act, 1974. So also, if a creditor comes to grab your retirement assets, not only do you lose your assets, your retirement funds, but now you got what I call salt in the wound problem, because now guess what? You're still responsible for all the taxes. And if you aren't 59 and a half, in addition to the state or federal taxes that you may have to pay, if it's a traditional and depending on what state you live in, you still got a 10% early penalty. So that can be a real, you know, like I said, salt in the wound if you have an early distribution as a result of a lawsuit, which is, like I said, it doesn't really help for negotiations when you really kind of got that dangling over your potential debtor. And then from my perspective, the two asset protection objectives of an IRA, nest egg planning, which is where most of my clients fall into, they pure asset protection, and then individuals like yourselves, which is another big pool of my clients for this particular model, is alternative investing in a proper structure, the checkbook IRA. So the important thing to know about retirement assets is that asset protection is the process of employing concepts of separating assets from liabilities. It's all of this. Identify your assets, identify liabilities, and create structures to keep them separate from each other. Some assets have liabilities associated with them, rental properties, right? And some assets don't, a bank account. And if you think about it, a bank account will never sue you. Right? So you never have to worry about a bank account slipping and falling and presenting a personal liability to you. That's not the case, however, when it comes to having a rental property. You have a rental property, someone slips and falls, they fall off the balcony, they electrocute themselves, there's a fire, they fall down the stairs, they will sue you. Hey, the neighbor dog bites your tenant, they'll sue you, right? So you have a lot, you have an asset that presents a liability, and you have some assets that don't. Bank accounts, bonds, T-bills, gold ain't going to sue you. So how do we deal with those is different. And so that's the idea of asset protection, identifying assets and create barriers. And here again, my genesis is why I deal with IRA LLCs. But one thing you have to understand is that when, for those of us who already have rental properties inside IRAs, they're dealing strictly with a self-directed environment without the use of an LLC. You have to understand something, and this is also misinformation out there. They say, well, if someone slips and falls on my rental property, it's inside my IRA, the IRA is at risk, and I'm not the IRA, so I don't have a liability problem. 100% incorrect. As a matter of fact, this case I'm citing here, First National Bank versus the estate of Thomas Phillips back in 1992, very clearly established that IRAs are treated no differently than our revocable trusts, right? They don't offer you any asset protection. If the property tenant slips and falls and that tenant is inside your IRA, that liability falls onto you personally. The IRA environment does not present any kind of asset protection barrier. So for those of us who have properties inside your self-directed IRAs and not within an LLC environment, you are no different than having the property, a rental property in your own name, which from our point of view is just a matter of liability roulette. It's just a matter of time that you get sued from a landlord-tenant perspective. And so you want to create some way to separate that liability from you, the asset. So here again, we would use an LLC outside of the IRA to hold rental properties, and we would use an LLC within the IRA to hold that rental property to protect you from liabilities of the tenant. The IRA does not offer asset protection. And then, of course, the more barriers between assets and liabilities, right? The greater the leverage you have to negotiate a fast and favorable settlement with your creditors. That's basically a general thesis statement for any kind of asset protection. All right. So regarding an asset protection toolkit that we use as asset protection attorneys, you're looking at liability insurance, exemption, concurrent ownership, marital plans, businesses, debts. And here's where this kind of falls in: asset protection for retirement assets. We use estate planning tools and business planning tools as well. So I'm just kind of jumping to this one particular area within the asset protection environment. And so as I already mentioned, retirement plans are really broken down into two different categories. You have ERISA qualified and non-ERISA qualified. ERISA qualified, very strong asset protection because they do include federal protections. If you think about what ERISA stands for, Employee Retirement Income Security Act. So it's a Retirement Income Security Act. And it wouldn't provide the public policy of providing for safe and secure retirement if the first time you get into a fender bender on the freeway, that your creditor can take all of your retirement away from you. The government wants us to have assets for retirement. Otherwise, we all become a ward of the state when we're 65 years old. So here they've created very powerful protections to protect those funds. So we know when we put money into our 401k, it's protected. And one of the big landmark cases that put this, fact patterns that made most people aware of this is O.J. Simpson. Right? O.J. Simpson was found liable for wrongful death, but yet the Goldmans were not able to take his NFL pension. Why? ERISA qualified protection. Very simple. That's how strong ERISA is. I mean, wrongful death, they couldn't even liquidate OJ's pension plan. Now, compare that with non-ERISA qualified. You'll see I have IRAs, SEPs and simples, or Roth equivalents. Not governed by ERISA, but governed by state law. So you have to look to your state statutes. As I already mentioned, many states say we offer the same protections to our IRAs under state law as they would have had under federal ERISA. Great. Not in California. California has their own statute. You need to look it up. So here, specifically in California, I'm making reference to our CCP, which is the California Code of Civil Procedure, and it's found in section 704.115 sub E. And this is what it says in California, IRAs are exempt to the extent that the funds are necessary to provide for the reasonable retirement needs of the retiree's spouse, and dependents, taking into account all resources that are likely to be available for the support to support the judgment debtor when judgment debtor retires. So as you can see, whenever we see the reasonable retirement needs, I have no idea what that means. And so that kind of scares me as an asset protection attorney. There's no certainty here. And reasonable depends upon your age, the dollar values, what you do, what your typical earning potential is. And so it creates a little bit of a void for us. And this is very common for those states that don't give you the same protections as the federal ERISA. You'll see some variation of this California reasonable need thing in your state statutes as well. So this is the world that I'm operating under, and that's why the IRA LLC is an important solution for me. And so here, what I've done with the IRA LLC, I've taken it away from the Code of Civil Procedure, and I've moved it up to the LLC laws, which are a bit more principle-driven towards protecting and limiting liability. So when the IRA makes its investment choice inside the IRA LLC, the assets in the LLC are now protected by the LLC laws and statutes as opposed to the state statutes. This is an entirely new type of LLC. I get this all the time. Hey, Brad, you know, I got this LLC. I made on LegalZoom. I was planning on putting a rental property in it. Just never quite found it. And now I'm ready. I have this LLC. Can I use it? And the answer, as I mentioned before, what I tell you, you can't buy your own stuff, which means you can't buy your own LLC. It's not set up properly. Not only can you not buy your own LLC, the LLC isn't set up properly, nor does the operating agreement even qualify this LLC to be an owner of qualified assets. So the answer is no. It's a special, specifically tailored LLC, needs to be set up properly from the get-go, or boom, you just stepped on a landmine and complete dissolution of your IRA assets with all of its taxes. So this is an entirely new type of LLC. It is started, created, and owned entirely by the IRA and is specifically designed to respect all IRS and Department of Labor codes governing IRAs. So this is not a do-it-yourselfer stuff. This is what the structure is. I think this is the big takeaway I want you guys to get. Just if you can visualize what it is, you'll see it. I always think a picture is worth 1,000 words. And so here you go. Here's your traditional IRA, and we'll just sound Fidelity, I don't know, with your custodian. And what you need to do is you need to get that over into a new self-directed environment. And this is the company that we've been working with. Again, we have no affiliation. We have no fee sharing with them. It's just I've been working with them for 10 some odd years. They're great. And absent you having your own provider, facilitator, we normally would recommend that you work with our folks because, again, they know who we are and we work very well with them. This facilitator will help get you from the current custodian over to a self-directed environment. Now, we come in and we create your very specialized, specially tailored IRA-owned LLC. Again, you can't create this. You can't buy your own stuff. It needs to be created by a third party. That's where we come in, Barth Calderon. And then we have it's called a direction letter. We give a direction letter where we were going to have an exchange. Our IRA is going to buy 100% membership interest in a LLC, in exchange for the dollar amount, whatever the amount you want to contribute. It could be 100%, it could be 50%, whatever percent you want in the LLC. And this is how you get the money from an empty LLC into an LLC now with your retirement funds. So let me digress here for a moment and explain to you why an LLC is the tool that we use from an asset protection perspective. And so here we have an example of a very typical LLC. And in our case, we have a client that puts both their cash and they have a rental property inside an LLC. Again, this is outside the IRA environment. This is just LLC 101. So you can kind of see why we use LLCs within real estate environment for retirement accounts. So here you're typically the manager, you're typically the owner. And the problem is with our rental property, as always, tenant sues you. Tenant sues the landlord. The landlord in this case is the LLC, and everything inside the LLC universe here in gray is subject to satisfaction of the tenant. And I get some shocked eyes in the audience when I talk about this. It says, wait a second, they can only take the property in question. I say, wrong answer. They can take everything that's owned by the LLC. They sue the LLC. They don't sue the dirt. The dirt is just one of the assets to be foreclosed on. And so if that dirt isn't sufficient to satisfy the claim, they go after every other asset inside. This is where you want to make sure your cash and your property are in separate entities. Now, you have liability protection. Great. That's the whole reason why you have a limited liability company. Problem is, you lost all of your investments. So when we want to separate assets from liabilities, we now break it down into LLC 1 and LLC 2. Yeah, you got additional legal fees. Yeah, you got additional ongoing costs. But that's the cost of doing business. If you're going to get involved in a real estate game, you need to make sure that you play the game properly and with the fees, deductible expenses against the earnings, have it set up properly because the liability protection is well worth it. So here you have LLC 1, LLC 2, same fact pattern, slip and fall. Now you may have lost the property and yet you still have liability protection, but now you didn't lose your cash as well. It's in a separate universe, LLC number 2. Very important principle. Importantly also is that remember that not only does the tenant present the liability to us as the property owner, that's why we have an LLC, let's not forget that we present a liability to our investments. So it's not the tenant suing the landlord, it's my car accident on a Saturday trying to take my assets away from me. My rental property is an asset. I want to protect it from the outside claim as well. So here we have a personal creditor. They would then take foreclose our membership interest, and now the LLC protects you this way as well. And if you see I have in quotes up here, dual protection. It protects us from the tenant, protects us as landlords, they can't get to us, and it protects us as owners and protects our assets. So LLCs are unique that present dual liability protection, which does not happen in a corporate world, for example. It happens in an LLC world. So that's why I use LLCs as the basic building block within this IRA-owned LLC environment. So that's a little bit of a sidebar. So now here you'll see why we create LLCs tailored to hold IRA assets. And then here we go. And now this is where you get checkbook control. As the manager of the underlying LLC, following all the rules in the properly designed operating agreement that tells you who you can deal with, who you can't deal with. Remember, disqualified people and prohibited transactions. You got some rules here you got to follow. But now you have the control and the power to be able to invest in all those things as evidenced by IRS Publication 590. Everything but life insurance, collectibles, and S-corps. So many of our clients go right back in and invest in a business. They lend to a business. They buy stocks and bonds. You want to put it right back into your same broker? Fine. I'll give you example after example. Brad, I love the guy I'm working with at Fidelity. I just want the asset protection. Can I put the money back with him when this whole process is done? Yep, you bet. You can buy real estate and some kinds of annuities within your IRAs, et cetera, et cetera. Again, we're limited only by Publication 590, which is not much of a limitation at all. And now, checkbook control. Now, you as the manager of the LLC, you get checkbook control. You have direct access and speed. This is where I was telling you earlier, very common that people with foreclosure sales, trustee sales, probate sales, they go to an auction. And they say, I want to buy the property. The judge puts the gavel down, sold, $150,000. You can't go up to the auctioneer and say, okay, now I'm going to go to my direction, my custodian, and with a direction letter and get a check for $150,000, and I'll be back to you in 2 weeks with a check to pay for it. Ain't not going to happen in that type of environment. You got to have money right there at the time it's done. Now, same example, sold $150,000. You, as the check writer, checkbook control, write a check, $150,000. Boom, there you go. Matter of fact, give them your debit card number. It's the same thing. You have checkbook control of an IRA, LLC. Speed, convenience, no need for direction letters, delays, etc. That's why most people use this within a real estate purchase environment. You don't lose opportunities because of the direction letter and time delays with custodians. Direct access and speed, lower custodial fees. As a matter of fact, none, because you're doing it all yourself. Large investment options, and you would hold all the assets in the name of the LLC, which, as I already explained to you, for a lot of my clients, primarily focused on asset protection. The checkbook gives ease of administration and also privacy, which we'll talk about, on offline for a different reason. It applies, but it's beyond the scope of today's talk. So it kind of helps to keep your name off title as well. Okay, and then protect your IRAs. With the IRA LLC, you can get added protection beyond from litigation, beyond state protections, like here in California, the California CCP. So here's the law. I get this. Hey, is this stuff legal? It sounds too good to be true. As a matter of fact, the big landmark case was Swanson versus Commissioner. You'll see this posted all over the place on the internet when you look up IRA-owned LLCs, 1996. And where was the big case? You'll see I have it cited there. And the bottom line was, it didn't deal at the time with an LLC. It dealt with a corporation. And it was a purchase of a corporation, because LLCs weren't really in vogue in the mid-90s, because they didn't even become issues until late 80s. So they purchased stock, 100% stock in the company. And then the IRS wanted to make that a taxable distribution of the IRA. And they challenged it. And then ultimately they won in the tax court, saying that it was not a prohibited transaction because of the reason it didn't fall within those people at 79, 76 exclusion folks in prohibited transactions. And it was further clarified in the IRS field service memorandum back in 2001, where here again, the IRS legitimized the IRA LLC. And then specifically another big landmark case happened in 2013 called Ellis versus Commissioner. And this was in a tax memo. And this dealt specifically with the use of IRA-owned LLCs. An IRA can purchase all of the initial membership interest in an LLC, which kind of distinguishes it from the Swanson case up on top. Swanson dealt with the purchase of a corporate stock, and then Ellis dealt with the purchase of an LLC. And here again, everything was fine, not a prohibited transaction. So again, we kind of have green lights. As long as you're following the rules, everything is fine. This is always my wrap-up statement with this, okay? With great freedom over your IRAs comes great responsibility, okay? There are certain rules and regulations regarding the IRAs that if you mess those up, you will result in taxes and penalties. I don't know how many times in the last 45 minutes I said that. Hopefully you guys will appreciate this. It's important. Everything is fine. You just got to follow the rules. When an investor takes the transaction process away from the custodian, one of the benefits of a custodian is that when you send up a direction letter, they may come back and say, can't do this. This is a disqualified person, or that's a prohibited transaction. You got someone looking over your shoulder. Within the IRA LLC world, you're the manager and no one's looking over your shoulder. You write the check, and all of a sudden things don't work out properly. There's no one to catch your error except you. That's why you want to work with counsel. So when an investor takes the transaction processing away from the custodian through the creation and funding of an IRA LLC, they are truly flying on their own. Again, not a problem. Just make sure you have someone holding your hand. No big deal. So in conclusion, I want to leave you with this particular structure map here, because this really is the bottom. If you understand this, you get it. You get the money from your current traditional IRA over to a self-directed environment. We typically use a facilitator, or in this case, we're using UDirect or whomever you want to use. There's a transaction that takes place to a direction letter. Money winds up in your specially tailored IRA LLC. You're the manager with checkbook control, and then you can invest in anything as long as it's not prohibited by IRS publication 590. So with that, I want to kind of just hand it back over to Paul here. Let me kind of exit out to the stop sharing, and there. Okay, Paul, so you're back online here.
Okay. Hey, thanks, Brad. Fantastic. I always learn something there. And thank everybody for joining. We're going to have a ton more of these educational live webinars. So continue to stay connected with us on messages for future events. And remember, we're going to send you an email after this. It'll come out probably in the next 15 minutes. Look for that. If you have questions, anything related to this or any other planning, then we'll have a button you can click on it to initially talk to me for a few minutes. You can tell me what's going on. I'll get you pointed in the right direction to Brad. So again, thank you, and we'll see you next time.